I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's September 29th, and we have a lot to talk about. A lot of us may have to think back to a time before the pandemic to remember what it felt like to get a good night's sleep. But if you're someone living with MS, you might have to think back even further. Research tells us that more than half the people living with MS report significant disruptions in their sleep and difficulty maintaining a consistent sleep schedule. And that can lead to additional health issues, along with an overall decline in quality of life and well-being. My guest is Dr. Katie Siang-Sukhan, a physical therapist, associate professor, and the director of the Sleep Health and Wellness Lab at the University of Kansas Medical Center, Department of Physical Therapy and Rehabilitation Science. And we're talking about the importance of sleep to your overall health and what you can do if you're experiencing sleep problems. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Siang-Sukhan, there are a few other things that you should know about. Over the past 3.5 years, I've frequently commented on the ongoing efforts to eliminate the Affordable Care Act, more popularly known as Obamacare. Because these actions have consistently been carried out by only one political party in the United States, my rants have come off sounding more political than I would have liked. But trust me when I say that I would have expressed the exact same sentiments no matter who was trying to take away the benefits and protections afforded to people living with MS that are contained in the Affordable Care Act. And I've also heard those of you who have asked why I would choose to bring politics into the podcast. Well, since I'm about to do that once again, I feel like I should answer that question. I created Real Talk MS for people who are affected by multiple sclerosis. From the very beginning, when Real Talk MS first launched 161 episodes ago, I saw the podcast as a platform to talk about the real progress being made in MS research. I found then, and I still find today, that progress made me feel more encouraged and hopeful about the future for people affected by MS, and I thought that as other people heard about the gains that medical science is making, they might feel more hopeful about the future, too. I also realized that all of that research relied on funding. And while the National MS Society is the largest private funder of MS research, so much of that research funding comes from the National Institutes of Health or the MS research program that's overseen by the U.S. Department of Defense. And the level of that funding, or whether some programs are funded at all, well, all of that is a function of public policy. It's our elected officials who are making those important funding decisions. From the very beginning of Real Talk MS, I wanted the podcast to keep you informed about new treatments and new disease-modifying therapies. But the greatest MS medication in the world wouldn't make a bit of difference to anyone if that person didn't have access to that medication because it remained unaffordable. And I realized that that access to doctors and medical specialists, along with the best, most effective disease-modifying therapies, all of that access was also determined by public policy. It was our elected officials who were making those decisions through the healthcare legislation that they passed into law. The things that people affected by MS care most about: access to quality healthcare, access to affordable prescription medications, and research that will lead to a cure. All of these things are determined by and heavily dependent upon our elected officials. So, from my perspective, there was never a way that this podcast could possibly overlook the politics of healthcare, as those political decisions impact people affected by MS in the most profound way. And so from the beginning, Real Talk MS has always been about advocacy. In last week's episode, I reminded you that the act of voting was the most fundamental aspect of advocacy. And this week, I think I can provide you with an example of exactly what that means and why it's so important. Just a few days ago, President Trump announced what he said was a health care plan that protected the more than 100 million people living in the U.S. with pre-existing conditions, provided better choice, and dramatically lower prices when it came to buying health insurance. I always urge you to vote on behalf of your own self-interest. To cast your vote for the person or issue that will provide you with an opportunity to live your best life. And fueled by the president's pronouncements, it would seem that casting a vote for President Trump was doing exactly that, voting on behalf of your own self-interest. So let's talk about why I'm going to suggest that you do the exact opposite, and why everything that the president proclaimed is just not true. The most important aspect of the president's announcement of a healthcare plan is that it isn't a healthcare plan. What President Trump released was an executive order stating that it is the United States policy to protect people with pre-existing medical conditions. Unfortunately, that executive order has absolutely no power to protect people with pre-existing conditions. It's a symbolic statement with no effect on health insurance companies or people with pre-existing conditions. And it's an odd statement for this president to make when you consider that this administration's Justice Department is scheduled to appear before the U.S. Supreme Court exactly 1 week after the election on November the 10th to argue that the only law that actually protects people with pre-existing medical conditions should be eliminated. If you received your MS diagnosis after 2010, you've never experienced either being unable to purchase health insurance or having your insurance priced so high and with so many restrictions on what it would cover that it was almost pointless to purchase it anyway. But that was the reality that people living with MS, living with cancer, diabetes, even allergies, faced every day before the Affordable Care Act became law. The Affordable Care Act didn't only require insurance companies to offer insurance to people with pre-existing conditions, it required that they offer that insurance at the same price as everyone else. And that's really the key to protecting people with pre-existing conditions. The president's executive order doesn't say anything about doing that. The results of multiple surveys point to how living with a chronic illness imposes significant, often painful financial pressures on families across the United States. Now, for just a moment, imagine what your financial situation would be like if you didn't have access to health insurance. The cost of your health care would still be what it is, but it would be on you to pay for it all. The president's executive order offers you no protection. That can only come from Congress. And it's worth noting that it took Congress years to pass the Affordable Care Act. And that was at a time when Congress wasn't as politically fractured as it is today. Beyond pledging that it's policy to protect people with pre-existing conditions, and I'll say this again, that's not been the demonstrated policy of this administration. Because for the past 3.5 years, this administration has never once introduced a healthcare bill that protects people with pre-existing conditions. In fact, while working hard to repeal the Affordable Care Act and let each of us fend for ourselves, this administration has never introduced a healthcare bill of any kind. But beyond expressing the hope that people with pre-existing conditions are protected, the rest of the president's healthcare announcement outlined things that I guess he'd like to see in future healthcare legislation. But none of it exists today, and it may never exist. There isn't a single bill in Congress that reflects any of the items on the president's wish list, and he and his party have had 3.5 years to write that bill. The Affordable Care Act is far from perfect. There are plenty of ways that Obamacare should be improved. And that's what we used to do with laws when we identified opportunities to make them stronger. We fixed them. Medicare was passed into law in 1965, and since then it's been tweaked dozens of times in both major and minor ways. In fact, it wasn't until 1972 that Medicare was amended to include people with disabilities, no matter their age. Prescription drug coverage was added to Medicare 38 years after Medicare became law. Laws are meant to evolve to make them work better. But when it comes to Obamacare, there's been a persistent effort, and that effort has only been on the part of one political party to, rather than fix the law, simply eliminate it. And for the life of me, I don't understand who is better served by doing so. And what this party couldn't accomplish in Congress, they've taken to the courts. So I guess on November 10th, we may see who's best served by eliminating the protections for people with pre-existing conditions, eliminating the financial subsidies that make health insurance more affordable for lower and middle-income families, and eliminating the expansion of Medicaid at a time when the COVID-19 pandemic has caused millions of people to lose their jobs and the health insurance that went along with those jobs. I hope that doesn't happen. But elections have consequences, and so it's a distinct possibility. So as you determine how you'll be casting your vote in the upcoming election, please don't be fooled by pronouncements posing as policy. For whatever else you may think President Trump has or hasn't done, things which you may or may not agree with, this is a podcast for people affected by MS, and your access to affordable health care has not been protected by this president. Make no mistake, your future health care is on the ballot in November, and elections do indeed have consequences. The Archives of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation is the official journal of the American Congress of Rehabilitation Medicine. The journal is written by and for rehabilitation professionals, and the current issue of that journal carries a paper written by a team of some of the most well-respected MS rehabilitation experts in the world. The paper is titled, Health Behaviors, Wellness, and Multiple Sclerosis Amid COVID-19, and it specifies evidence-based best practices when it comes to the physical wellness, nutritional wellness, and emotional wellness of people living with MS, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. Writing about physical wellness, the authors point out that there's convincing evidence that exercise and physical activity improve walking, balance, fatigue, depression, and quality of life for people living with MS. They recommend sitting less and moving more every day, and point out that exercise training guidelines for people with MS call for 2 or 3 days a week of aerobic exercise and 2 or 3 days a week for resistance exercise. Now, for more information about exercise and physical activity for people with MS, along with links to the National MS Society's recently released videos on exercise and physical activity, you may want to check out episode number 142 of Real Talk MS. And you can listen to that episode by pointing your browser to realtalkms.com/142, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. When it comes to nutrition, the authors point to the emerging evidence for the value of maintaining a healthy diet in both adult and pediatric MS. Higher consumption of fruits and vegetables and lower consumption of red meats and fats have been associated with less depression, lower levels of disability, and higher patient-reported quality of life in MS. And while the authors remind us that there isn't sufficient scientific evidence for recommending a specific diet in MS, people living with multiple sclerosis should maintain simple, healthy diet habits that include making at least half your plate at meals, all fruits and vegetables, choosing healthy fats like olive oil and grapeseed oil, as well as fish and poultry, adding whole foods to your diet, and reading food labels, because any food that has less than 5 ingredients is less likely to contain high levels of sodium or refined sugar. Finally, in addressing emotional well-being, the authors of the paper acknowledge that emotional wellness plays an influential role in the overall health of people living with MS and other chronic conditions, and that depression, which affects 1 in 3 people with MS, has adverse effects on cognition, pain, fatigue, our adherence to exercise, and adherence to disease-modifying therapies, along with overall quality of life. While resilience is common among people with MS and positively affects MS symptoms, function, and quality of life, the authors further point to the wide range of psychological interventions that are available to manage depression and build resilience, including cognitive behavioral therapy, mindfulness-based interventions, stress management, and self-hypnosis training. And many of these interventions treat multiple symptoms like mood, pain, and fatigue all at the same time. The paper's authors point out that MyMSToolkit.com, a free online tool, offers someone the opportunity to self-manage their emotional well-being, and that the emerging use of telehealth as a means of providing psychological counseling has proven to be an effective mode of care for people with MS. Taken as a whole, this paper provides a detailed but easy-to-understand wellness roadmap for people with MS, whether during or after the pandemic. If you'd like to review the paper, you'll find a link in today's show notes. And when you do, you might also notice that one of the paper's authors is Dr. Dawn Eady from the University of Washington. And you might also recall that just a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Eady joined me on the podcast and shared some great insights and strategies for building resilience. If you happen to miss that episode, you can catch up on our interview on episode 159 of Real Talk MS. And if you've downloaded the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android device, you'll find a copy of the paper under the bonus content tab. In previous episodes of the podcast, we've talked about the potential of something called neurofilament light chain to serve as a biomarker for MS. Now, just as a reminder, a biomarker is a measurable biological entity found in blood, other body fluids, or tissue, whose presence is indicative of some phenomenon, such as disease, infection, or environmental exposure. For instance, if you're not feeling well and you visit your doctor may take a blood sample, and one of the things that will be checked in that blood sample is your white blood cell count, because a high white blood cell count is a biomarker for infection. Neurofilament light chain is a protein that's usually only found in nerve cells, but as MS causes the progressive degeneration of nerve cells, neurofilament light chain is released into the blood and cerebrospinal fluid. In fact, studies have shown increased levels of neurofilament light chain years before the clinical onset of MS. So neurofilament light chain may be predictive of the clinical onset of MS. And if you're a regular Real Talk MS listener, then you might remember back in July when Dr. Robert Fox and Caroline Sincock from the International Progressive MS Alliance talked with us about the Alliance's recommendation that research be advanced to determine the role of neurofilament light chain as a biomarker for MS progression in clinical trials. Now, that would accelerate proof-of-concept clinical trials of new progressive MS therapies, which in turn would encourage new drug development and stimulate further investment in progressive MS research. So as we've been saying for a while now, neurofilament light chain represents a game changer. And last week, the medical technology company Siemens Healthineers and pharmaceutical company Novartis announced that they're going to collaborate on developing a diagnostic test using neurofilament light chain for people with MS and other neurological diseases. This brings us a very big step closer to being able to diagnose MS with a blood test before MS symptoms ever develop. And that creates an opportunity for proactive treatment with disease-modifying therapies that can stop those MS symptoms from further developing and having any impact on a person's life. And while that technically may not be the definition of a cure, it's certainly my definition of some very good news. Healthy immune systems protect a body by recognizing which cells are part of that body and which cells are foreign. And when a healthy immune system identifies cells that are foreign to that body, it attacks them. That process is called immune tolerance. Autoimmune diseases like MS are caused by a failure of immune tolerance, when the body's immune system instead attacks the body's own cells. And last week, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration accepted Swiss-based biotech company Enokion's investigational drug application for ANK700, an investigational therapy that's designed to re-educate or retrain the immune systems of people with MS and restore their immune tolerance. That FDA acceptance will allow Enokion to begin a phase 1 clinical trial of their drug later this year. ANK700 has already shown effectiveness in preclinical models of MS, demonstrating its ability to prevent or reduce disease activity in mice and non-human primates by introducing engineered proteins into the liver that are designed to change the immune tolerance processes of T cells. This approach represents one more pathway that scientists are exploring through what the drug manufacturer is proclaiming as a potentially transformative approach that produces immune tolerance in the central nervous system while treating neuroinflammation. Stay tuned for more details as the ANK700 clinical trial gets underway. And if you're interested in learning more about Enokion's approach to treating autoimmune disease, you'll find a link in today's show notes. Besides disease-modifying therapies and other medications that help manage MS symptoms, there are things that don't require a prescription that have been shown to improve overall health and well-being for people living with MS. Things like getting a good night's sleep. But for more than half the people living with multiple sclerosis, that can be challenging. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, the director of the Sleep, Health, and Wellness Lab at the University of Kansas Medical Center, Department of Physical Therapy and Rehabilitation Science, Dr. Katie Siang-Sukan. I think we can all appreciate that getting a good night's sleep is something that benefits everyone. And if you're someone living with MS, it's perhaps even more important. But research suggests that more than half the people living with MS report significant disruptions in their sleep and difficulty maintaining a consistent sleep schedule. My guest is Dr. Katie Siang-Sukan, a physical therapist, associate professor, and the director of the Sleep, Health, and Wellness Lab at the University of Kansas Medical Center, Department of Physical Therapy and Rehabilitation Science. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Siang-Sukan.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, given all the craziness we're seeing in the world today, quality sleep has become a challenge for many people. And I thought it would be helpful if you could explain why sleep is so important to our overall health and well-being.
Sure. I think a great thing is how much emphasis nowadays is being put on the importance of sleep for our overall health, because there's a lot of evidence coming out how sleep really impacts pretty much every system of our body. So it's important for our immune function. It's important for our ability for our tissues to heal. There's a lot of interest right now in the importance of adequate quality sleep for pain modulation. And so when you're not sleeping well on a prolonged period of time, your ability for your brain to modulate your perception of pain gets lost, and it isn't working quite as well. We also know that adequate sleep is important for the health of our cardiovascular system and also for cognitive function. So if you are not getting good quality sleep, that it's much more difficult to pay attention, to do problem solving, to process information. We also know that sleep's important for helping to flush out some factors that can build up during the day. So one example is beta amyloid. The thought is that while you're sleeping, that the fluids in your brain help to flush out things like beta amyloid. So if you're not getting adequate sleep, that it's more likely to stay in your brain and put you at a higher risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. And sleep's also really important for learning and for memory consolidation. So there's studies that show that while you're awake and you're learning new things, that that information basically gets replayed at night and gets consolidated within your existing memories. So if you're not getting optimal sleep, it puts you at a higher risk of various chronic conditions like diabetes, obesity, Alzheimer's disease, cardiovascular disease. And so yes, absolutely, sleep is incredibly important for our overall health and well-being.
Does sleep hold any benefits that are specific to people with multiple sclerosis?
I think, you know, in addition to how sleep's important for all those various functions that we just talked about, I think for people with multiple sclerosis in particular, you know, one way that sleep is particularly important is because of its association with fatigue. And so, you know, fatigue is such a huge issue in a lot of people with MS. And while fatigue and sleep are not the same exact constructs, they certainly are related. And so, you know, for people who are not getting good quality sleep, you know, they are at a higher risk of having fatigue issues. So there's the issue of fatigue, but then also, too, the association between sleep and things like depression and anxiety, physical activity, and, you know, just social connections. You know, when we're not sleeping well, we're less likely to be physically active. We're also less likely to, you know, really want to be around other people and choose to be around other people, which, you know, is hard during a pandemic. But just those social connections are so important, you know, particularly for people who have a chronic condition. And so absolutely, sleep perhaps, you know, while it's important for everybody, you know, it should be definitely an emphasis of importance for people with MS.
Do we know what causes sleep problems among people living with MS?
So there's lots of different reasons why sleep issues are found in people with MS. And so one issue is due to the MS itself. So with multiple sclerosis, that's due to a disruption in myelin within the central nervous system. And so if MS is impacting the nerves and the brain areas that are responsible for sleep, then the MS itself can be disrupting sleep. But oftentimes, what is common in people with MS is also the comorbid issues that are frequently found. So those other issues that people experience, so things like spasticity, pain, nighttime urination, you know, frustration or stress with having a chronic condition, you know, those all can exacerbate or be the underlying cause of a sleep issue for people with MS. So it can be for multiple different reasons. And that's why it's really important to talk with your doctor about your sleep issue. So that way your doctor can really discern what's causing the sleep issue and then how to adequately address that issue.
Have you found that there are any differences in the sleep problems experienced by people living with relapsing remitting MS and people living with progressive MS?
So as far as sleep disorders, they are very similar. So we see an increase in incidence for people both with relapsing remitting and primary progressive or even secondary progressive, where they have an increased risk of insomnia and sleep apnea and restless leg syndrome or in periodic limb movement of sleep. Those are more common in people with MS across different subtypes. But then I would suspect that, you know, some of the comorbid issues may be more prevalent or more pronounced or more severe in people with the more progressive type of MS. And so it may be that those underlying conditions are really what is disrupting sleep in people with more progressive types of MS.
We know that MS doesn't only affect individuals. It affects families. We often talk about subjects like caregiver burden and caregiver burnout on the podcast. And I imagine that there are an awful lot of caregivers who take those stresses and anxieties that they face during the day, they take them to bed with them. Has there been any research done on the quality of sleep among caregivers?
That is a great question. I am not aware of any studies that have looked at how caregivers for people with MS, how their sleep is impacted. I do know that there are studies done in caregivers for people with Alzheimer's disease that do show that caregivers oftentimes have disrupted sleep. But with Alzheimer's disease, oftentimes they have very disrupted circadian rhythms. So they sometimes have nighttime awakenings and nighttime wandering. So slightly different, diseases and conditions. But I would certainly believe that people who are caregivers for individuals with MS, because of the stress and the anxiety, and perhaps having to help that person if they are having disrupted sleep, it absolutely is going to disrupt the sleep of the caregiver as well. And so oftentimes, we do think a lot of times about, how to help the person with the sleep issue. But sometimes too, in the care that we provide, we do have to consider the caregiver, both if the individual with MS needs assistance for managing their nighttime sleep disturbances, but then also how is that impacting the caregiver? So that's a great point that, these issues oftentimes need to be considered together. Because if you're just addressing one person but not the other, you may not be adequately providing the best support that could be given.
So if someone affected by MS is listening to this conversation and they're experiencing sleep problems, what steps should they take?
I think the biggest step and my biggest recommendation is to talk to your doctor about your concern about your sleep. I see and I hear so often in the clients with MS that I work with is that, they've had these issues for years and never mentioned it to their doctor because they, one, they either didn't think it was that important or because they thought other issues were more important. And just, sometimes the doctors are busy and you only have so much time and there are other things you need to talk to them about. But I would encourage people to elevate the concern about their sleep. And mention it to their doctor and talk to their doctor about it and have them take it seriously. Because if it is something that is concerning to you and it's disrupting your sleep, remembering how that is impacting your health and your well-being. Absolutely. And so that would be my biggest message is to not think that disrupted sleep has to be normal and that it has to be the norm for somebody with MS, there's nothing that could be done or, maybe as I'm getting older, that it's normal to have disrupted sleep or, everybody with MS has disrupted sleep. There's nothing that can be done. Absolutely. There's things that can be done and there's treatments. But the biggest thing is to have your doctor do a thorough workup to see what could be causing your sleep issue. And then do you have a sleep disorder? Because it very much determines, what the course of action, what the course of treatment then is going to be. So something can be done, I guess is maybe my main take home message.
What sorts of treatments are available to treat MS-related sleep issues?
There's a lot. And it depends, again, on the reasons that you're having the sleep issue. So if you do have a diagnosable sleep disorder, so something like sleep apnea or restless leg syndrome, with sleep apnea, oftentimes you'll be put on like a CPAP or a BiPAP or use an oral appliance to help keep your airway open. With restless leg syndrome, those typically do a full workup to see if you have an iron deficiency. Sometimes other medications can be helpful. Exercise can be helpful. So it's really critical to figure out what's causing your sleep issue. Is it a sleep disorder? Then, providing the evidence-based care for that sleep disorder. Or for people with MS, oftentimes it is an MS-related issue. So like spasticity or pain, if it's one of those things that are disrupting your sleep, then talking with your doctor about appropriately managing the spasticity and the pain. Sometimes it's a matter of conversation of, changing medication, increasing the dose, changing the timing of the medication. So that way your spasticity or your pain is being better managed during the nighttime. And so that really is why it's so important to have an assessment by a physician to really nail down what's causing the sleep issue so that the appropriate treatment can be provided.
Sleep is something that people often take for granted until the moment it's disrupted. And when that happens, it can feel like nights last forever and mornings are greeted with feelings of complete exhaustion. And that just doesn't add up to a very good quality of life. So I want to thank you, Dr. Katie Siangsakun, for all that you do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/161. You'll find that link in today's show notes so you can easily copy and paste it right into your email or text. I don't think that I have to tell anyone listening to this podcast that the COVID-19 pandemic has intensified and in some cases multiplied the challenges of living with MS. More than ever before, people living with multiple sclerosis need access to reliable information, support, and connection. We're witnessing that even during a pandemic, MS doesn't stop. And neither does the National MS Society. With vital funding from supporters like you, the National MS Society is continuing to meet the urgent and expanding needs of the MS community during these unprecedented times, while ensuring that the MS research community rebounds quickly from COVID-19, so that the progress and momentum toward finding a cure continues. And that's why I hope that, as you're able, you'll make a donation to the Society's COVID-19 Response Fund. It couldn't be easier. Just text the word GIVE to 68686, and you'll get a link right to the MS Society's COVID-19 Response Fund webpage. I hope you'll consider contributing today, because it's never been more important. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.